What does Matthew McConaughey say? All right, all right, all right. It's, what is it? Friday, and it's the 25th. Halloween is coming up, and Costa's very excited about that because he likes a Halloween. He likes a dress up. You're also doing this marble circus thing on Sunday, which I'm going to on Saturday.
The luxurious marble circus.
It's going to be very good. Jesus, have you seen the kind of staging they're putting up there?
Wow.
It's mind-blowing. I mean, we had Greg, who's put the whole thing together on Wednesday's show. He was sitting here telling us about it, and I actually think he undersold the whole thing. It's that fucking good. So let's take a look. I'll report back. I'll take some photos and videos. Bring it back on Monday. I see a very rude comment here from Carl. Mm-hmm. Carl DeSantos, who says, Gareth, are you retarded? It's an aircon. You put it on, set the temperature, and then go to sleep.
Wow, Porter.
Yes, you know, Carl, I mean, I'm learning here. I'm not good at all the things, you know? I show little vulnerability, and what do? You stomp all over me. Very mean. I'm not going to handle this. I'm going to Liam Payne myself. What floor are we on? Why do you guys go, wow. Well, it's too soon? Like I said to you last week, what is it, too soon for Amelia Earhart too? Are we allowed to joke about that yet? How about Queen Hatshepsut? Is it too soon for us to joke about her? Oh, Julius Caesar, don't bring that up. It's too soon. Fuck's sake. Sensitive people, really, honestly. Okay, so this woman was just crowned Miss Black Melbourne.
Let's see her.
Have a look. Have a look. I'm not going to say anything. Just take it.
Oh.
All right. Now, let the comments flow. I'm going to say nothing until we've heard from Costa and from you. Okay? Just leave her up there for a little bit longer. Now, I know that we're treading on some very dangerous territory here because people don't want to criticize her because she's fat and because she's black. And they're terrified. I mean, Naked Goose just says, Jesus Christ. Okay. But I'll tell you something. She's not ugly in this picture because she's fat or she's black. She's ugly because that crown looks like an apple on the head of a pumpkin. It's like she's all out of proportion. The nose is weird. The mouth, I don't even know where the chin is. It's not that she's fat, because there are fat women who are pretty. There are. That's a weird, there's a funny potato shape going on with the nose there. What's happening? And remember, she's got makeup on here. This is how she looked when she won. This is like the wedding picture of her. Pageant celebrates the brilliance of the crown, diverse beauty, and limitless potential of black women. I know loads of black women who will look at this and go, oh, hell no. Okay? Because I also know that there are lots of people in the world who don't look at someone like this and go, that represents me in some way. Miss Black Melbourne to compete in the 2024 Black Florida USA Scholarship Pageant, November 9 to 10. This is very bad news. The eyes are very close together, says Carl. But Carl's been rude to me already, so you can take this with a pinch of salt. The fact that she's black is irrelevant. Why are the lips superimposed onto her? Look, it almost seems like there's a moustache thing going on. I'm not going to say more than that, but Francois says, looks like Mr. Potato Head. You see. So, okay. Then James says to me, he's got a picture of some woman in a different pageant. Put that up. Okay. Whew. Now, look, she's big, okay? But actually, and I'm really not trying to draw a false equivalence here. Also, the crown looks a little bit small for a big head. Big head, right? Mm. Big fucking head. However, her features are not too bad. You can tell that if she lost a few kilos, this woman would not be unattractive. Am I right? You can picture it if you squint your eyes a little bit. Okay. So there we go. Beauty pageants are no longer a thing. I think we can say that now. Beauty pageants, the time is up. No one wants them anymore. First of all, the feminists hate them because they say it's just a meat market. They're objectifying women. So the feminists are on this side. Okay? I'm on that side because these are not, it's not a beauty pageant anymore. It's now a diverse or a save the world. Or so I'm on the same side as the feminists now. Beauty pageants are stupid. Who's still on that side?
Me.
You are? You still support beauty pageants? You would go to like the crowning of Miss Krugersdorp?
Yes.
You would?
The sheer spectacle of the human condition is on display. That is why I'm obsessed with beauty pageants. And anyone who knows me knows that I never miss a Miss Universe.
You're a big fan of Maki Umalo says, tell the truth. At least don't lie. Hell no, she was given the crown out of guilt. No, I think that's right. Signet says, fugly pageants is what we should call them. Beauty is in the eye of the beer holder, says Slippery Pickle. Those last two need to come with an SAB truck.
Wow.
Okay, but you understand my point. I don't, these pictures came up on my social media feed, and I thought, I would never enter a beauty pageant, okay? I would never enter like Mr. South Africa because I know I'm not good looking enough. Yeah, I'm not looking for compliments here. I'm not fishing around either. Even in my 20s or 30s, when I had overconfidence, brimming overconfidence, there's no way you'd get me to enter one of those things. I didn't even do it at school. We used to have the school like Mr. Whatever, Miss mm-hmm. Whatever. I would never do it. I have shame, okay? I have enough shame to know you're going to embarrass yourself and you're going to look like shit. Plus, if they ask you to take off your shirt or whatever, it's going to be fucking embarrassing. So I stop myself. Now, why doesn't someone help those people to stop themselves? They shouldn't be in beauty pageants, those ladies. Dear Linda says, why compete? You want to degrade the world. I don't know about degrading the world. That's very hard, dear Linda. And I mean, I haven't seen what you look like, but... calm down there, ma'am. Arthur says, in the old days, we were taught that the saying beauty is in the eye of the beholder. There are fucked up people that see beauty in her and the fat. Okay, so you know my feelings about fat people. My credentials are really, really terrible with fat people. I don't need to try and improve that. But this is not a beauty pageant, guys. Like, otherwise, the word beauty means nothing.
Yeah.
You know, really. Like, you could say it's a pageant for plus size girls, or you could say it's a pageant for strange looking people. I mean, we had a Mr. and Miss Gareth Cliff once, but the point was that you had to be different. So we had dwarf people. We had a woman with a third nipple. We had a guy who could like make his tongue do funny patterns. And we had a dude who could like put his arm, click it and put it behind his back, like make them join up in weird ways, like almost like an orangutan.
Who won?
I can't remember, but they were all great because it was a different sort of pageant. We didn't call it a beauty pageant because that would be a lie. So they mustn't lie and do this. Just call it what it says on the tin. Okay. Like that's people want to buy what's on the tin. If you get home after you've bought what you think is gherkins, and you get home and it's asparagus, you're going to be disappointed. So let's just call it what it is on the tin. Okay, you want to look like Miss Black Melbourne over there? Put her on again. Traumatize people. There she is.
My niece had something.
And what kind of a smile, by the way, is that? A share. What kind of smile is that going on there, ma'am? What kind of smile are you got going on there, huh? What's this all about?
The hair could have been very different.
I don't mind the hair. The hair's fine. And makeup, they've done as good a job as they... Yo, they must have called in like Australia's best makeup artist. But you can't help that. Yes, sis. All right, enough. Enough. We don't need to beat up on her anymore. She's got a hard enough time ahead of her. She's about to find out about the real world. Mr. and Mrs. Cliff, a competition I have no chance in, says Bitcoin Boot. No, man, it was a talent, like a talent show. That's essentially what it was. But weird talents. Had Denny's pasta sauce in Biden presidency, laugh now, cry later. says Eddie. Eddie, obviously high on the drugs, first thing in the morning. Well done.
Mm.
Bettina says, why do we need to put a crown on anyone for being in a category of something? Well, people like a crown. They like to be celebrated. You know, if anything, the last 20 years have taught all of us, except Bettina, that people want to be celebrated just for being, just for existing. Costa, so nice to have you here. Do we have a crown here for Costa?
Please.
Bring Costa a crown just because he exists, right? This doesn't happen in comedy, by the way. Comedy is still tough. Like you get chased out of town. People with pitchforks come at you on a stage in comedy if you're not funny.
Yeah. Or worse, they don't laugh. That's even worse.
Oh, it's
That's
horrible.
Even worse.
But it's merit, right?
Yeah,
it's merit. Like Kamala Harris is running for president of the United States. She has zero skill, talent, ability, charisma, nothing. She's an empty vessel. There's no content there at all. You don't have to like Donald Trump. Many people don't. I happen to really hope he wins, but almost more because it would be such a blight on America if they elected this person who's just, she's just nothing. Like, can you tell me one thing that you think is awesome about Kamala Harris? Please try. I'd really like to hear one thing that makes you go, oh my God, that is why she's the presidential candidate. That's why, because she's phenomenal at, or she can answer any question with, or she's funny, or she's just got a character. She's so great. What? Name the thing, anything. It doesn't have to be you, Costa. Anyone in the comments too. Just the one thing. But there isn't. It's like meritless. Someone put her on a stage, put a crown on her, and said, go, you go be president, because everyone's the same. No one's exceptional. There's no such thing as merit. Just for existing, you deserve a chance.
At the presidency?
Yes, at the presidency, Kamala.
Oh, my God, that's wonderful.
Okay, so she's going to run for president. And if she wins, then it's the end of merit. If Kamala wins, I'm done with politics. Done, says Hermine. Kamala never gives a straight answer. That's her talent. Well, maybe that's a thing.
Oh, that's a
she has a lovely laugh. Yeah, great laugh. Apparently, she gives good head. Ask Willie Brown. That's very mean, wow. Bitcoin Book, but there we are. That is actually true. She's never, I said this on Instagram or Twitter the other day and got a lot of heat from people. But Kamala, she never even made it past the primary. There's a crown. Look, don't you look special? Look at you, beauty pageant entrance. How nice, Costa. That's very good. You got to watch the show. And if you aren't liking and subscribing, you're missing out here, people. America's in Chritkak, whoever wins. Kamala's perfect. She's perfectly vapid, says Azalea. She's good at being a fake black female. But she is.
She is a female and she is black.
You know what her thing this week is? She's talking about raising children. She has no children. She talked about having a job at McDonald's. She never had a job at McDonald's.
Wasn't she a halfway decent attorney general?
No.
California? Halfway decent.
She was mean to people who were bust with weed in San Francisco. I mean, San Francisco is the one place in the whole of America where you could pretty much take a hypodermic needle in front of the governor of the state and inject yourself with heroin, and he won't. He'll go, hey, good for you. San Francisco, she was terrible. She's been terrible at every. She's failed upward. It's amazing. You know, you get people who fail up. Most of us in our jobs, in our lives, when we do something badly, we get fired. Not Kamala Harris. She gets promoted every time.
What's the primary story you were going to say?
Oh, so in the presidential primary when Joe Biden was elected, so that was for the 2020 election. So in 2018 or 19, when they had the primaries in the Democratic Party, because they didn't even bother with that this year, you know that. They just anointed Joe, and then they just anointed, and then they just kicked him out and put Kamala in. It's like a coup, except is it? Mm. Anyway, she ran as one of the candidates in 2018-19. She got so few votes that she dropped out before she even ran as a candidate for the Democrats in California, which is the state she's from. Nobody likes Kamala. No one's wearing Kamala merchandise because they actually like Kamala. Because 2 months ago, they were wearing Joe merchandise. And they'll wear any merchandise of anyone who's not Trump. She's got nothing. She's a zero. She's a big zero. And this goes for beauty pageants. It goes for the participation medals they give kids at school. It's like we need to know who's good at stuff. Don't you think, Costa?
I agree.
We need to know who's good. And how do you tell who's good? You put them in competition with each other. And then the best one, objectively, wins. That's why we still love sport.
Measurement.
Yeah.
Craft. Training. Effort.
You told me a story about how you had to do television commercial, like commercial TV for a while. But you did it because it taught you about cameras and being comfortable in front of cameras and microphones. And explain the story. Tell the people. People got to know.
I used to be a Home Shopping Channel presenter. I was the guy who stood there. I know how to hold product really still for 15 minutes while reading the price off a screen without my glasses on and the producer screaming in my ear and smiling at South Africa. Now over to you, Gareth.
Well, I would be terrible at that. See, I'm terrible at anything where I have to pretend. So if I'm not having fun, you can tell straight away.
Wow.
Yeah. So if I'm hired to do, like, there was this voiceover I did once for some product. And, you know, I never really liked doing voiceovers because, first of all, they don't actually pay so well. And even in those days, they didn't pay so well. You maybe get 1,000 or 2,000 rand for it, but you had to invoice them. And there was a whole thing. And then someone takes fees off here or whatever. And actually, just doing your day job probably makes you more money. But they would put the client in the booth, not in the same booth you're recording in, but outside on a sofa. Yeah. And then they switch things onto your ear. And then they go, can you say that line again? But instead of saying the, can you say the? You're like, okay. And I go, the product. And they go, more like the. And you go, the. And they go, no, not like that. So eventually, like after about 8 takes of this, and I'm getting progressively like more annoyed, and I'm getting progressively worse and less professional. And eventually I took off the headphones, I put them down, I didn't say anything. I opened the door, I walked out, I picked up my car keys, I got in my car and I just drove away. I didn't say anything to anyone. And then they phoned me like 5 minutes later, they're like, hi. Are you coming back? And I said, no, I never want to see those people ever again. And I don't want to ever come to your studio ever for anything ever again. But we paying you. I said, you don't have to. I won't invoice you. We'll just pretend this never happened. Okay, but the client's going to be upset. So I said,
bully.
Can be upset. I can go through the rest of my life with those people not liking me. I think I'll be all right. So well done to you for actually having, because it's hard, dude.
It is hard, but it's a skill that can be taught and learnt, for example, and I wanted that skill. So I put my back into it.
Good for you. Is it harder to do that stuff than it is to do stand-up?
Stand-up is harder.
Way harder, right?
Way harder. I've recently bombed a lot.
Jesus, dude.
And it's...
How do you get back up there after that?
Oh, no, you leave town. You don't...
You get in your car like I do. Yeah, you don't just perform drive
there
away.
Again. You don't perform there again. And you can blame the audience. You can blame the crowd. You can blame everything. But actually, it could also be the material. It could be me. So I need to work harder.
And for inspiration, is it hard to find the right stuff to talk about?
No. I look at my life, and we live in South Africa. There's enough.
Hey, where's the coffee that you promised Costa?
Actually, yes.
Costa Coffee. I brought that up and said to him, Costa Coffee, it's a big thing in the UK. And he says that every time he a friend of his goes to the UK for any reason, they bring you Costa Coffee merchandise, right? Like
even
a mug
napkin,
or
a little. I got you a Costa Coffee.
Like a
napkin.
Shitty little serviette with the printing.
What must I do with it?
They think they've done you a great service, huh? No,
give me a gift.
They bring you some cheap shit off the table.
Yeah.
And they think they've done you a massive service. Ah, well done, James. Here's producer James, everybody.
Thank you so much, James.
Show him to the world.
Cheers,
there, Flex. There we go. Hey, James. Okay, very good. Never pass a coffee over a laptop. What's wrong with you? I trust you with my equipment here. And I mean, what are you doing in that production booth? Unbelievable. Have you cleaned your car?
Good.
Will you take a picture for us while it's still clean? And then we'll finally exonerate you on Monday, all right? I'd like to do that. I would very much like us to clear the slate with you, James. And also give your mother less of a headache, because I know she's been hassling you to clean the car. She's embarrassed on your behalf, which is unbelievable. All right. I can only imagine what adults as presenters of kids' shows must go through. Constantly fucking happy and positive. Adults as presenters of kids' shows. They don't do they do kids shows like they did when we were young?
Candace Hildebrand. Remember
I remember Candace Hildebrand.
KTV.
Jesus, dude, I met her like when I eventually got into the entertainment business. And I was like, this is the one girl you wanted to meet, because she was this blonde. She had big tits as well.
Buxom.
You know, I know this show, you're going to think this is just so like, it's just guys talking like guys, but she was so hot. Like she was properly like the hottest girl on TV. And even though she started off in kids TV, I was a kid when I was watching her. So you kind of saw her grow up. And then she made a song.
Oh.
And then she got married. And I mean, I met her like twice, but it's funny how when you meet someone who you've seen on TV, as especially as a kid, it's like the most exciting thing ever. And I don't think I ever saw her again much after that. It was like
she is now.
I don't know, but I'm sure she's great. I mean, she stopped with the whole TV thing. She got married to some dude, and I think she's living somewhere overseas or something. I don't even know. But man, do you remember her?
Candace.
Oh.
Hildebrand.
Producer James looks like a Simpsons version of a person. That's what Rochelle says. Azalea says, I was referring to your comment about it being cuck irritating. Shock collar for James, says Steve.
Wow. Yep.
You guys, Candice Hillebrand went straight into the spank bank, says Carl DeSantos. Mm. Again, Carl, if you think I'm bad today on the show, then just take a look at Carl. James, pull us a picture of Candice. See if you can find a picture of Candice Hillebrand. Just see if you can find one. I can still remember her like it was yesterday. She's a good-looking girl. Yeah, she'd probably be horrified that we're even talking about her now. You know, she's probably married, got three kids. She's like doing the sports run, fetching them from cricket or whatever. And here we are talking about her, like objectifying her. Like, this is actually quite gross. Right? We should stop. Let's move on.
Okay.
Now, there's something that Costa did want to talk about. He said, what are the rules with able-bodied people using disabled toilets? I got shouted at, this is you, for using one the other day. All right, first tell us the story.
All right, so
Where is this?
It's at a place. There are three toilets, men, ladies, and disabled.
Yes. There,
literally three toilets.
Okay.
I'm gagging for the loo, busting. All right, I just need to go. Men's closed.
To
ladies,
pee or?
To pee.
Okay.
The men's is closed. The ladies is locked.
Right.
Both are locked. Disabled is open.
Sure.
I went and used the disabled toilet.
Sure.
Closed the door, locked it, had a wee, washed my hands.
No problem.
Dried my hands, okay.
This is uncontroversial.
Opened the door and there she was.
Who?
Miss Fourways.
But she wasn't disabled.
No. Why are you using the disabled toilet?
Oh, she saw you go in and she
You're
waited.
You're not disabled.
She waited.
Well, she saw me coming out. I don't know how long she was waiting outside. And I looked at her, and I mean, I had this like instant ableist guilt. And then I realized, hang on, she's not disabled.
Yeah, exactly.
And I don't know, what are the rules around using a toilet that has a disabled sign out on it?
I think there is nothing wrong with you using the disabled loo in that case. It is just a hole in the ground that people's waste goes into. It's not a sacred place. It's not the Saint-Chapelle in Île-de-France in Paris. It's not fucking consecrated by the Pope. It's a loo. If it's open and there aren't any disabled people who need it more than you at that point, you're allowed to use it. Isn't that obvious?
I understand parking spaces because that's proximity-based.
Yeah, even the parking spaces. If it, what if there's no crippled people anywhere for miles around? Are you not allowed to use the better parking?
No. I'm okay with not using it.
I don't know, dude. If it's but raining?
No. The toilet,
if
though,
you've had a on. Bad day?
No.
All right. Okay. Maybe the parking, you've got a point. The toilet, different story.
Stop it. Exactly.
Okay. So don't feel bad about it, Costa. Don't let them manipulate.
Next time, I'm not closing the door.
Hey, Gareth, says Sanele, where's Jeannie D? Man, she was hot. Probably still is. No, she still is hot. She's a lovely looking girl. Not only did I meet her, I sat next to her and had a meal at the Short Market Club in Cape Town. I hope you behaved yourself, Sanele, when
she's
you did
lovely.
That. Because there's nothing worse. Like, I've got girlfriends who are extremely good looking. And they tell me that there's nothing worse than a guy who, like, gawks at them and makes them uncomfortable. Now, I've maybe been guilty of this myself at some point. The women in this situation telling me this, I'm now comfortable enough around them to not be weird and awkward. But a lot of guys, including me and you probably, can't help it sometimes. You see someone so beautiful and you behave like in a dorky, weird, awkward, embarrassing way. Mm. Right?
Yeah.
But it's so bad for the girl.
I mean, there are some impossibly beautiful people that I do stare at.
What do you do? Do you just like the camera thing that I did earlier with?
Well, you kind of look and then you look away. You don't have to be obvious.
Yeah, I don't know. You're supposed to act transsexual and offended when you have the disabled toilet, when you use it. Then you have privilege. Oh, okay. So you can
pull a card.
You can pull a card.
Hmm. Good one.
I do want to know why it's important for that girl who shat on you for that. I want to know why it's important for her to use that opportunity to, like, knock you down for just taking a piss. Yeah, I mean, she's not knocking you down for, you didn't commit genocide.
Yeah.
You didn't, you shouldn't be taken to the Human Rights Commission, right? I mean, you've done nothing that's criminal. You peed. You peed in a different place than the place that it says on the door. And there was no one hurt along the way. There's no one in there. There was no one waiting for it. It was just you. You needed to pee. But she felt like this was her opportunity to earn some points over you. Mm. So that's more concerning than whether or not you're morally right to use the loo. Anyway, so listen, I want to tell you about this movie that my friend Rian van Heerden is making. Have you got him? I want to talk to him now. Absolutely. Yeah, we'll play the trailer. Let me just do a little bit of an intro here. So Rian, of course, well-known radio and television personality. He's extraordinarily good at everything he does. Everything this man does turns to gold. He is a tremendous presenter. He taught me. He hired me in radio, okay, in campus radio. That's probably his lowest point. But everything since then, he's done extremely well. He's done TV shows. He's currently busy with, like, a bunch of them. He's got this brilliant interview show called Laat Aand met Rian, which you can see on CakeNet. He's got Wie Wordt een Miljonair, which is the South African Afrikaans version of Who Wants to Be a Millionaire. He's brilliant at both. Brilliant. Like, properly fantastic. He did an interview with Herman Mashaba the other night, which I watched. And it was a masterclass in interviewing with probably the most difficult and complicated and quite stupid guest that it's possible for anyone to have. And he did it beautifully. He also has a production company which has been producing some of your favorite television shows. But today, we're talking to him because they are making a movie which was his brainchild. It's his project called Bluthund. Comes out on Wednesday next week. You're going to the premiere, aren't you?
Premiere's on Wednesday.
Look at this, Costa. Oh. You see, you thought he was just a guest, but everything comes together on this show. Costa is going to the premiere because you know
Salonia Becker,
who is a star of the movie.
She's the blonde in the beginning of the show.
Fantastic.
Who dies.
All right, so let's not waste any time. Let's talk to Rian about this. It's just in time for Halloween, a proper Afrikaans horror movie. Probably, in my opinion, and I don't know whether anyone's going to contradict me on this, the first in its genre. Bierman, hoe gaan het?
Genade, goeiemorgen. Good morning, everybody.
From Pretoria,
Centurion.
Ek baie bly om jou te sien. So, just explain, because I mean, the last time we had you on the show, we talked about all kinds of things. And you dropped in when we went off air. You said to me, weet jy, ek maak a horror flick. And I said to you, just explain this to me because I didn't know. It's a full feature film, this. It's been in production. It's all done. It's coming out on Wednesday next week. This is very exciting, Rian. Is this the most interesting thing that you've done in the last 6 months?
I can tell you one thing, Bierman. I cannot decide which was more horrific, the movie or the making of it. I'm still traumatized by making this thing. It is extremely difficult to make a movie. I can tell you now, if you ever even consider making a movie, don't do it. That's my very first advice to you.
Why is it a nightmare? Is it the people? Is it the finances? Is it the editing? What's so shit about it?
Iman, it's fucking expensive to make. It cost me a fortune. I got to a point where, you know, we were shooting a scene at the restaurant just around the corner from my restaurant. I thought I'll treat everyone to a cappuccino.
Yes.
38 cappuccinos later, and I was handing out these cappuccinos, and I was trying to figure out what most of these people do. What do
and
you
were
do?
Paying, and I'm you like, were paying I all of them.
I'm paying all of them. I'm like, what do you do? Now I'm assistant to the assistant to the assistant. So number one, the movie industry in South Africa, if I ever do this again, I'll do it completely differently.
Okay.
I think it needs a serious shakeup. So that's the first thing. The other thing is, you know, dealing with it's been extremely difficult to get it right. Because remember now, this is a horror movie and it needs to be believable.
Yes.
And that has been the biggest challenge, to make it believable. So on Wednesday, we've got the premiere. The movie launches officially on Thursday, which is Halloween. But on Wednesday, I will watch it for the 31 times now that I've watched it. 31 times.
It doesn't scare you anymore.
It's fantastic. It's, by the way, it's great.
I'm absolutely sure it is. And funnily enough, unbeknown to you, since we spoke about this movie, and I mean, I've been very excited about it because I know that I said in the introduction, everything you do turns to gold. You're very good at everything. You have an eye for detail. I have absolutely no doubt it's going to be tremendous. But in between, I actually met people who have tangentially been involved in this movie, and they tell me it is exceptional. Like it's really terrifying. It's frightening. There's a like inbred kind of very a monster, this Bluthund, who's like the kid of these parents who are also fucked up. And I mean, it's a proper South African story, this, right?
Yeah. So if I can tell you the story quickly. Now, what happened was, you know, Carl, who's my right-hand guy and, you know, who's been with me in this business for I don't know how many years.
Yes.
So we were driving around Magaliesberg, of all places. We were filming a series and we were visiting a woman who was a goat farmer. And she made soap from goat's milk. Well, I hope it was goat's milk. Anyway, so we ended up driving to her farm. I said to Carl, this is one of the scariest places I've been to, you know, traveling to this woman's farm.
Oh, my God.
What if during 94, you remember all the white people were stocking up, specifically Afrikaans people. They were thinking Armageddon.
When Chris Hani was killed, they all bought tinned goods.
Mm. I did too. I bought a lot of tin stuff back then. I thought it's going to be the end, but I think a lot of people were very concerned about what was going to happen. And we forget those times. We forget what was going on in the country. So I said to him, what if there's this white family that decides we need to flee from whatever is coming? And we take our domestic worker with us, obviously, as Afrikaans people do. And they end up on a farm, which is the farm of the wife of the family, the mother of the family's father, who passed away. They end up on this little plot, plain plot.
Mm-hmm.
And they become a little community, and they survive there, completely cut off from the outside world.
Right.
So within this family, obviously, they procreate as incest. You know me. Obviously, I like these kind of themes.
Well, let's just interject with a little side story here.
Yeah.
There was a story that I remember from the news when, I mean, this is 20 years ago now, about the Fedders. Brechi Fedder and her brother, and they lived in Delmas.
Sure.
Yep. And Rian, he's so fascinated by the outliers in society, right? And this is what informs and why I'm absolutely convinced this movie is going to be brilliant, because he knows how to make it believable. But you met the Fedders.
So exactly that. I'm glad you pointed that out, because I was inspired by that family.
Yes.
What was odd to me, Gareth, was how normal they seemed. They had a laminated poster of Steve Hofmeyr against the kitchen, one of the walls. Big fans. But between the brother and the two sisters, they had like a love triangle between the three of them.
Right.
And I think they gave birth, between the two sisters, there were like 21 children or something. None of them survived childbirth. And they were all buried around the house.
Yes. Oh. I remember you saying that.
And Jesus. I remember talking to the mother. We were sitting at the kitchen table, and obviously the police at that point in time arrested the brother and the one sister. He killed himself in the cell. So shortly after this, I arrived on the farm. Mm. So I ended up talking to the mother, and she said to me, she doesn't understand why society does not get that love is love.
Wow. You know,
complete new context about what love means to some people. So to her, that was true love.
Yeah.
And that made me think, you know, what if you have this family and they come across as so normal, and they still practice some of the old Afrikaans ways of doing things as they remembered from before 94.
Yeah.
And this group of students stumble onto them. You know, they get lost, obviously, wrong turn vibes. This family is also a family of hunters, and obviously they end up in the clutches of this family. But Biedman, I do the scene, and I got to give away a little bit about the movie. But also, there's a dinner uh-huh. table.
Uh-huh.
And they on the table, you'll find human meat, ears, fingers, et cetera, et cetera. Mm. But they pray before the time.
You know?
Father, see, and the futsal. You know, it's lovely. It's great. It's great. Favorite scene?
Okay, so who's in it? Because you also... Casting this was a big thing, and there are some serious stars in the Afrikaans entertainment business. Many people who don't know the Afrikaans entertainment business might not necessarily know these names. This movie could make these people household names.
Yeah, for sure. So obviously, when I started doing this movie for the first time, a lot of people that we approached said, "There's no way I'll be in a movie like that."
They wouldn't do it.
No way. You know, it's going to ruin my chances to be on an Afrikaans soapy. I'll never be on Binlanders if I'm in your movie. So I loved how there were eventually these the brave few that said, you know, we'll be part of your movie. And I don't know if you know Tony Kapari, just so by the way, Tony is a South African legendary actor. He's been around, you know, he's always this B-cast, C-cast kind of actor.
Yes.
But he plays the father of the family. He's just next level. And my old colleague, Felicity Reakin, who was with me on my radio show.
Yes.
She's in it because I promised her she'll be in a movie.
That's amazing.
And then very famous soapy actors like Zak Hendricks and, you know, Cindy Swanepoel is
yes.
just incredible.
Okay, can we watch the – let's just watch the trailer quickly because
yeah.
I think people will want to, like, see it, and then you can come back and tell us some more. This is awesome. Take a look.
Dis ekke, Tristan hier, so staan nade. Ek gaan een lucky follower kies om saam met my in die Bus of Love al die padfeeste te ry.
Die nader voor my, ek gaan pie.
Diesel.
That's my friend.
Watch your back.
Jy weet nie wat se monster in die Bus of Love krijg.
Yes, I got goosebumps.
Lekker.
That's good. That is some good shit. Well done, Biermann. I'm excited just from the trailer.
Thanks, Biermann. You know, we walked around with that movie for 4 years until the guys from EVOD said, "We'll back you. We believe in this project." And they made it happen. You know, they backed us all the way, and it was fantastic to work with these guys. So I hope it's going to do really well for them. From our side, we definitely did what we could to make sure this thing is as scary as it could be, and the acting is as fantastic. Locations, it took a lot of work, Biermann. Let me tell you.
I'll tell you some other thing is that the movie that scared me the most is Wrong Turn. You know, there was that that one who screams and like jumps from the trees, and like I find humans who are slightly monstrous, way scarier than actual monsters. There's something about
that.
And this thing, I mean, that the older man, I think he's obviously the dad with the long hair and
Tony.
That's scary as hell, man.
You know, when I saw Tony on screen for the first time, when he did his audition, I said to myself, this is our Ben. Each one of them, I had a chat with them before, and I said, you need to become these people. You need to get into their heads. I want to tell you about the Bluton character, because obviously Michael Myers, Freddy, you know, you need a guy with a mask. Friday the 13th. And we wanted to get a really, really huge man to play the role of Bluton. And he is almost 7 feet tall. He's a huge character.
Sure.
And
was Mike Bullace not available?
Mike was not available.
Because I know he's a friend of yours.
Yeah. So it was important to me to, you know, to get this really, and you'll see the size of him in the movie. It's a one massive human being.
Wow.
And we were going around, what is the mask going to be? And, you know, I thought the bloodhound. Something, and we gave him all these skills of a bloodhound as well, but he's obviously disfigured. They found this mask in an old car and old Halloween mask, and he started wearing it, but he's very childlike, and he's a truly scary character. I don't think in South Africa we've ever had like a Michael Myers Friday the 13th Jason kind of vibe.
And is this the first time that someone has produced a full feature film in Afrikaans in the horror genre?
We've had really terrible horror movies in Afrikaans before. If I say terrible, you know, it's actually a compliment. kak is 'n beter woord. So vir my was dit we can do better in Afrikaans, we can do better acting, better dialogue, better story. Slasher though, it's the first Afrikaans slasher movie.
Okay.
You know, with a guy going around chopping up people.
Right. And yeah. I don't want you to give away anything, but do any of these people survive? I have to see. We'll have to see. Didn't that give you goosebumps? Now that trailer?
Yeah. Like I said, I know the one person in the movie, and I'm looking forward to watching it. I got the chills.
When you said you went to that goat farm, and it's the scariest place you've ever been, what do you think about it? Because I mean, you and I have been to some scary places, Rian. Some terrible entertainment venues in Pretoria. But
yeah,
what is it about that place that gave you the chills?
It was a road that led up to the farm. Traveling down that road, there was something about that forest. So it was important to us that, there was a movie decades ago called Just Before Dawn.
Mm-hmm.
Also people stalked by this killer. And I remember the forest because I was a kid when I watched it. And I thought, if we can get that forest right, and that forest reminded me of that movie where anything can come out of the forest at any time.
Oh, my
time.
God.
So it took us a while to find the right forest, but we did.
Where was the right forest?
You're not gonna believe me if I tell you the story now.
So, go on.
Just like you, I enjoy history. I'm a huge history buff. And the history of the Midrand area is just incredible. You know where Olifantsfontein comes from?
No.
So they used to hunt elephants at Olifantsfontein. That's where they found the herds of elephants.
Yeah.
And right in the middle of this this area of Midrand, there's a farm. And some of the original owners, that came here, obviously, poor Tracker families.
Yes.
I'm talking about those owners.
Yeah.
One of the families still own this particular farm.
Mm.
And I ended up, and someone told me about the house. Actually did a call out on my radio show, and I still had one.
Mm-hmm.
And they said, we live on this farm. There's this old house. And I said, it can't be Midrand. Everything's developed.
Sure.
But I went there, and when I saw that house, Beaumont, I said to myself, holy shit. It is turn of the century. Back in the day, apparently one of the farm workers was caught by a lion on the lawn in front of the farmhouse.
My God.
Yeah, it was then. It then did service as an English hospital during the Anglo-Boer War, and since then it's been derelict. So we then took this house and made it the family's house. We turned it into the family's house inside. It's all the stuff from the early 90s, late 80s. Everything looks, with the crying child and the portrait stuff.
Oh
like
my
that.
God! But this is amazing. So first of all, I had no idea that Midrand had any history at all. I've always thought Midrand was just a terrible place. So this is novel. And the fact that you had this eye for detail with all the decorations and things, I mean, that's what gives it that authenticity. But are you a fan of horror movies? Is this the stuff that – would you watch a horror movie on your own?
You know, my mom used to be the biggest horror movie fan, but she didn't want to watch the movies alone. So I had to watch it with her. So I think I saw I was like 9 years old when I saw my first horror movie.
Wow.
And since then, hundreds. I worked in that video shop for 8 years. So I'm a huge horror fan. And I wanted to make sure that we can create something that can hold a candle to the best ones I've seen. And this one can, and
fantastic.
It took us, you know me. There were moments that I thought, I'm not happy with the scene or this second or two or three seconds in the movie.
Right.
And we went back into the forest and we filmed it again.
Jeez,
until we got it right.
That's incredible. Now, is there a lot of pressure on this to generate massive box office money? Is it going to be released on the movie circuit, or is it going straight onto EVOD?
So luckily, this was a commission. That's why I'm so thankful that these guys believed in us, the guys from E and EVOD. They paid for it. It belongs to them, and it will be released directly onto EVOD on Halloween, the 31st of October.
Amazing. Your timing is excellent, huh?
Thank you. That was the dream.
I think this is so exciting, and really, I don't like horror movies, but I'll watch this one. I'm especially frightened of like monstrous inbred people who eat other people, but I'll deal with this. You're going to go to the premiere.
Yep.
Bloody amazing. All right, Birman, bye-bye, donkey. And I know you've also got limited time. I don't know how you manage with all the things that you've got going on at this stage. And you're everywhere. It's terrific. I'm so, so pleased that you've managed to do this. And I think the Afrikaans movie industry will owe you a debt of gratitude for breaking a new genre open for them. I think it's fantastic. Well done.
Thanks, Birman. Thank you for the tight. And look out for the surprise at the end.
Uh-oh. All right, there we go. There's plenty of reasons to watch. Thank you, Rian van Heerden, everybody. What a guy. And what a talent. And he does. He's just so damn good at all of this stuff. So I have no doubt this is going to be an absolute winner. Scary, huh? Flex, did you find that frightening? The trailer?
Yeah, bad.
Not bad. Are you a horror movie fan, Flex?
A little bit.
Okay. Is it the fact that they're white Afrikaners that's the most scary?
Sure.
Black people are definitely not going camping where there are like weird white people who stuck in the 90s. James, frightening for you? All right. Okay, you don't often see severed feet and fingers. That's a good thing, James. That speaks well of your character. No, that's very good.
That for me is the thing. When two things horrify me.
Yes.
A body part.
Yes.
Because it has a story behind it. Why is that thumb there? Where is the rest of the body? Who cuts it off? So a body part. And there were enough body parts there. And moving furniture. When furniture moves.
On its own.
On its own. That's when the movie must shut down.
You don't like that, huh? That's your line.
Satan has arrived.
A turnoff is just before Sedgefield to a place called Karatara.
Mm.
Have you heard of that?
No.
Okay. We talked about this once on my show years ago, though. Yeah, it's there near Knysna. Karatara. And apparently this is a place where, like, there was serious inbreeding. Totally isolated community. People didn't go in, didn't go out. And for, I don't know, 50, 100 years, it's been like a secluded little place. So there are these places in South Africa that are scary, for real. Tracy says, I've stopped at the co-op shop at Karatara, or Karatara, however you pronounce it. It's a really goosebump weird place. You see, people are on it. Reenendal is another one. I don't know where Reenendal is, but that's frightening.
Where did the Antwoord from?
wherever the Antwoord, I think they're from Bellville,
okay.
With fairness, yeah. Black people want to go camping, full stop, so they're safe. Won't go camping, says Grant. Yeah, that's what Flex was saying just now. Flex, of course, speaking on behalf of all black people this morning on the show. It's very important. So there we are. I mean, you got a horror movie for next week. You got your dress up. You've got Halloween plans. It's fantastic. Costa's all organized. And I hope you will have a good weekend. Whatever you're up to this weekend, I'll come back on Monday with reports of how the luxurious marble circus went, and we'll tell you lots of cool stories. And I'll have to see this movie now. I think I'm intrigued. Also, especially because Rian says there's a surprise at the end, which both frightens and excites me. So where are we going to see you? Are you doing any gigs at the moment?
No.
Not?
No,
unfortunately. Oh, because you had those two like really horrible bombs.
Well, no, I'm working on a new show for next year.
Awesome.
I'm going to America in December as well. Going to do some comedy there.
That's very good.
Next year, March, my next show.
I'm excited. All right, dude. It's always nice to see you. Thank you, Costa.
Good to see you. Thank you for having me.
And where can we find you on the social medias?
Costa Comedian.
Costa Comedian.
There we go. On Instagram, right? TikTok, Costa Brilliant. Comedian. Thank
awesome.
You.
Awesome. And thank you for coming in this morning. It's nice to have you here.
Good to be here.
All right, everybody. We'll be back on Monday with more of what you like and less of what you don't. And if you have anything to say about it and you don't think we've got the mix right, find another show.
Stay tuned, because Stairway to Stardom is next with Frank Massey.
On the Stairway to Stardom, you'll see tomorrow's stars today. On the Stairway to Stardom, we're here to brighten up your day. We've got singers and dancers and actors performing for you. But there's more, so much more, and it's all right here for you. On the Stairway to Stardom, we'll entertain with talent and style. On the Stairway to Stardom, we've got the other shows beat by a mile. On the Stairway to Stardom, on the Stairway to Stardom, on the Stairway to Stardom, on the Stairway to Stardom.